From the Muses Studios in Showbiz USA, it's Clean Burn. I'm your host, Andrew Heelan. Every week on Clean Burn, I am joined by an entertaining guest to talk about a King of the Hill episode. This week's guest is Mac Williams. Mac is an animation director and producer. His work can be seen on shows like Our Cartoon President, The Get Down, Archer, Frisky Dingo, C-Lab 2021, and more. Now let's talk Season 1, Episode 4, Hank's Got the Willies, with Mac Williams.
Hello.
Welcome aboard. You. Welcome to Clean Burn, Mac. Great to have you here. Mac, also from the animation world, you work in animation. You've worked on a billion shows. Listing your credits was kind of cumbersome, but...
not quite a billion, but I'm well on my way.
Yeah, you're getting there. You're adding, well, episodes maybe. Maybe we get to a billion episodes.
Yeah, that would be... Right. That's a lot of episodes.
Realistic goals.
That'd be almost half as many episodes as there are of The Simpsons.
Right. I think that's just going to keep going. At this point, they have... they can just have so many episodes written, they can just plug them into an AI, and they have enough dialogue, they don't need the characters to come in anymore, and they can just create them for infinity.
Yeah, this is obviously not a Simpsons podcast, but yes, no, The Simpsons is like, it's like a sports season now. It's just like every year there will be 16 NFL games, there will be 22 episodes of The Simpsons, whatever the number is. I don't actually know the real number of either of those things.
It's actually 17 NFL games starting this year.
Oh, I was close then. Okay.
Yeah, you were really close.
All right.
And then, yeah, I don't know Simpsons. Anyway, but we're not here to talk about The Simpsons.
We're not.
Podcast doing that. We're going to talk about King of the Hill. Now, a little bit of background for the people. You, in animation, what you primarily do these days outside of your own production company is you are a director. So what's an animation director do?
That is an excellent question. It sort of depends. Show to show, the role of the quote animation director can change. For example, when I was on Archer, my role as an animation director was a very technical role. I was really in charge of how everything moved, you know, how things were put into motion. I didn't have a huge role in the design aspect of the show or the writing at all, or the storyboarding is very much, as those were handled by like our writer and creator, Adam Reed, and our art director, a mutual friend of ours, Neil Holman.
Yes.
And then on other shows I've been on, storyboarding is a huge part of animation direction, and the director, really can control the story, control what's happening in the episode, the action, how you see things. It's a lot different than a film director, whereas a film director, you know, they're totally, this is their project, and outside of the producers, they're really in charge of everything. With an animation director, it sort of depends.
Yeah. From my experience in TV and film, the director says action, cut, and then takes credit for everybody's work. But
yeah, well, so in an animation director, there's no action and cut, but I still get to take credit for everybody's work. So that aspect of it is very similar. that's absolutely true. At least in terms of the things that it has in common with a film director is that you are completely reliant on your incredible, amazing staff of people to make you look like you know what you're doing. So I would say one of the top parts of being a good animation director is hiring and selecting the right people to work with.
Right. So it is kind of more of what I think a lot of people think of a producer as, is you're kind of building the team, right?
Well, again, this is where
it very much depends on the show.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Like, because some places the animation director may be brought in and the team already sort of exists if it's like a pre-existing studio or something like that. Right. But in most of the shows that I've been on, I've had a large part in building the team, and I've had a large role in building the pipeline, like how the show is actually made step by step, especially shows that I was on from the beginning, which I, you know, pipeline is very technical animator stuff, but basically like the steps of the process, how everything works from a technical standpoint, and how the show gets made department to department, and figuring all that out is a big part of my job.
Cool. All right. So, well, my job here is to host a podcast about King of the Hill. And so let's get into it. So we get off, the episode starts up. We start with a dream sequence, which is not a tactic that this show uses very often. And Hank is out there playing golf with Willie. Now, they show the sign at the beginning that has the rules, and those are actually rules from Willie Nelson's golf course. So such as no more than 12 in a foursome. That's an actual rule from what is currently Willie's cut and putt, I believe it is, unless it's been sold again. I don't know.
I had a question because this is from 1997. So I believe that, like, I certainly am completely unfamiliar with Willie Nelson in the context of golf. Like, I'm very familiar with Willie Nelson's music and his
he's
legacy, but not in as it pertains to golf in any way.
Yeah, Willie Nelson, like, I don't know. He Willie Nelson's career, and since he's such a big part of the episode, let's just get into him, is kind of strange because most of us only, you know, unless you're significantly older than me, probably only know the later part of his career because even that started before I was born. But in 1970, so dropping out of college and leaving the military, he was a DJ for a while and was playing in bands and stuff. Then he moved to Nashville, was a very successful songwriter, as most people know, Crazy by Patsy Cline, written by him.
Right.
Hello Walls by Ferlin Husky, and, you know, playing in bands and studios, and had this wildly successful career. In 1972, retired and left Nashville. So Willie Nelson retired in 1972 and then did most everything that we know him for today. He moved to Austin and then got back into music, and that's where, you know, that led to Shotgun Willie and Red Haired Stranger and then the 80s stuff, you know, with Waylon and Half Nelson and, you know, live, everything that has come since then. But yeah, when he moved to Texas, just golf was a thing he got into. One of the reasons he wanted to have his own golf club or golf course, well, he, you know, thought it was good for business, which business was not Willie's strong suit. Thus the $32 million IRS bill he got hit with.
Correct.
But his real reason that he wanted to do it was if he owned his own golf course, he got to set the par. So if you get there, there's like whatever the par is set by, like, hey, this is what Willie Nelson thinks you should shoot on this hole.
This is a par nine.
Yeah. Yeah. If that's what will, I mean, there, I'm sure they have some type of, this is the professional handicap and there's like two different versions of it, but yeah, you can play. I think that's a real power move. Build your own golf course so you can tell people what they should shoot on it.
Well, I'm curious, like, I wonder if it has its, like, if there's Willie's tees. Like, you know, when you go to a golf course, there's, like, the women's tees and the pro tees. Like, I forget how many. I haven't played golf in many, many years. But, like, if there's Willie's tees that are, like, halfway down the fairway, you can start
I haven't played golf in college. I took golf as a PE because it met two standards I was looking for at that point in my life. One, I knew I wouldn't have to sweat, because it was winter quarter, and two, it was a PE that I could smoke in, which is pretty hard to find those, but golf was there for me.
I would imagine that, like, at the time when we were around in college, like, I wonder if you could smoke, because I remember bowling was also a PE.
You could still smoke indoors then, so if you took bowling as a PE, which the university did not have its own lanes, you went to the local course.
Yeah.
Bowling alley didn't sell beer, though. That would have been the real combo. Because it was a dry bowling alley. If you could have drank and smoked during your PE,
that would have been pretty nice.
Apparently, UGA had a PE back in, I want to say, the 70s, and it was called something along the lines of, like, leisure education or something. And it was basically like cards and darts.
Wow.
PE. That's, yeah.
That would have been the one. That would have been the one.
Billiard might have been a PE back then.
I got real ambitious. I mean, this is weird. Totally. It's so off topic. I'm sorry. But like, we both went to UGA. I was very ambitious. All right. You went to UGA, right?
Yes.
Okay. You could cut that out or whatever. we both went to UGA.
University of Georgia, for anyone who's not in the know. Yes.
I got real ambitious and took weight training as my PE. And I was like, I'm going to, you know, get in shape. Cause by the time I took my PE, it was like, my time was winding down and I'd been putting it off. And so by that time I definitely put on like the freshman 15 and more.
Right.
So I was like, I can do this weight training class. And that was, I mean, I got an A, but it was, you didn't have to do much to get an A in a PE.
No, I mean, good use of your student funds though, instead of paying for a gym, this money you're already paying, you'll just work out, you know, it's,
Right. Well, because by the time I was doing this, we had what's the giant gym called?
The Ramsey Center.
Ramsey. Yeah, we had Ramsey.
Space Center it was supposed to be, and then they changed it at the last minute.
Yeah.
Or Student Physical Activity Center. This is all very exciting, Eugene.
Yeah, no, sorry. you got this stuff out for people.
Yeah, you didn't have to take it. I think when we first got there, NP would have still been in, not Stegman Coliseum, but Stegman Hall, which did not have air conditioning.
Now that I do remember that. Yeah. So I feel like I'm off to a really great start on this King of the Hill podcast by talking about the Simpsons and PE. So I'm really off to a rousy start here. I'm an excellent King of the Hill podcast guest.
Yeah. But so Willie just loves golf. That was the thing, you know, that, you know, he's chill. He could go outside and enjoy his the country club now is it's also like where his studio and stuff is. So,
yeah. Well, I bet he would. Oh, you speaking of smoking during PE, like I'm imagining
also, that, as an outdoor activity.
Yeah,
the co-chair of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws.
Right.
I don't think anyone's unfamiliar of Willie's love for marijuana. Well, let's try to get back to this.
Yeah, episode. Sorry. I do have some questions that pertain to that, but let's go to the episode. So, yeah,
Willie and Hank in Hank's dream. They're playing golf. They tee off together. They both hit holes at one. Willie hands him an Alamo beer. They chug them. They toss them into the recycling bin because Willie also owns a biodiesel company and he cares about the planet. And then they start playing guitars together. And then Hank is awoken by a noise. And that noise is Bobby playing Hank's guitar, which is Betsy. And Hank quickly informs him Betsy is not a toy. And then he notices an odd smell to ask him if he's been playing it with his feet, which I would not have ruled out for Bobby. But no, it turns out it was cheese.
Cheese.
Because Bobby was imitating his favorite prop comedian, Celery Head, who may or may not have been a takeoff on Carrot Top. It's really hard to say.
What is that a reference to?
It's definitely Carrot Top.
No, I know, but I'm saying it's hard to.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. How could you miss it? I was like,
No. How could you possibly know what that's a reference to? It's so opaque and cloaked in mystery. Who they are referencing here?
It was probably a fun day in the writers' room. Like, how can we do Carrot Top and not call it Carrot Top?
There were so many
stuff on the whiteboard there.
There's so many celebrities in this episode. It makes me wonder if they asked Carrot Top and he was like, no, or if they were just like, we're not asking Carrot Top. We don't care about Carrot Top.
Cause this is, and also this was the first time they really did celebrity casting and the celebrities coming, really even any celebrity voices, much less them coming in and playing themselves.
Right.
So
I feel like we're getting a little bit ahead. I don't want to get too far ahead of it, but
I think anyone who's listening to this has watched probably all of the episodes.
There's so many celebrities, but also I'm curious about Carrot Top because this is, as we've mentioned, 97. That's what, 24, 5 years ago. I'm bad at math. Was Carrot Top as much of an object of ridicule as I feel I feel Carrot Top is an object of ridicule today.
Right. He kind of, as best I recall, he already was at that point. He'd kind of hit his peak when people were really into him. And he's still, as best I know, he's still, doing it in Vegas and selling tickets. And I will say this about Carrot Top. Name me a better prop comedian.
That's fair.
You can't. He completely owns that genre. And
true.
While it maybe isn't exactly my cup of tea, it definitely, he does it well. You know, he makes good props and the jokes work. And I don't know. I want to see myself buying a ticket to Carrot Top, but.
Oh, yeah. I saw Carrot Top just recently. He turned up on one of my guilty pleasures is Bar Rescue. He made a random cameo on a episode of Bar Rescue where it's he was apparently friends with the bar owner and just out of nowhere, suddenly Carrot Top is there while they're renovating the bar, but just to say hello. And then he's gone. And I was that was so, it was so very, very weird. And he's very strange looking.
Yeah. Yeah. He's I think opted for some cosmetic options that he doesn't.
Hey, he's in the entertainment industry. So right. It's part of the biz.
He and John Taffer both live in Vegas, so they might just hang out off camera and we don't know about it.
This was in Vegas. That's not to, now we're going to do the Bar Rescue podcast because this whole season, the new season is all in Vegas. So I know it was in Vegas.
Oh, I have not, as a cord cutter, I'm not really keeping up on the new time. I didn't know that. I didn't know. I was wondering how they were handling the pandemic with Bar Rescue. So,
all right, so now we're past the cold open.
We really need to get to the finish of this show.
Sorry.
Anyway, so Bobby tells him, you know, it's Eddie Cheddar. Another great pun. I'm sure they had a lot of fun coming up with those. And then he tells him about Celery Head and one of his props he makes where he, you know, put tissues on shoes in case you have a runny nose. And Hank had a beautiful reply was, "That's not a joke, son. That's a waste of good glue." which is just a beautiful Hank Hill-esque line. There's at some points, like even this early, the characters are still finding like their voice and their literal voice, and the animation's starting to come together. But stuff like this, you're like, okay, that's the Hank Hill I'm going to know 12 seasons from now.
Yeah, that was very interesting to me. I felt like, you know, Boomhauer, Dale, Bill, I mean, like all the gang is sort of pretty well figured out, the main characters.
Yeah, and we're only like four episodes in and they...
Yeah, I was sort of impressed by that.
Yeah, that's every time I go back and rewatch, I'm always blown away by that. Hank had a great line too, when... After Bobby said he was paying, Celery had made $3 million last year.
He said, "That can't be your, what is that?"
People don't pay money for that. But he said, "Now, Robert Klein, that's something you pay money for." It's another great Hank reference.
Hold on now. This is where I wanted to ask questions, because they reference a number of names that I was totally unfamiliar. Like, okay. I don't know who Robert Klein is. I do not know who that is.
Robert Klein, a stand-up comedian, probably would have hit his peak more in like the 60s and 70s.
Okay. All right. I assume he was a comedian, but yeah. I just
not bitter old guy on a panel show kind of now. I will say this about Robert Klein. Yeah, let's go everywhere. When I was like in kindergarten, I loved Robert Klein. I remember distinctly he had this one joke on an HBO special. And the joke was, Hawaiian Punch says it's 10% real fruit juice. What's the other 90%? And 6-year-old me thought that was brilliant, hilarious, and insightful. Looking back, I can say maybe not the best joke ever written, but Robert Klein in the early 80s was definitely appealing to a 6-year-old. So by 1997.
That's the end of the joke? Like there's no like further?
No, that was it. No. There were no tags. It was just like... What's the other 90%? And I'm like, damn, Robert, that's right. What is the other 90%? I'm going to bring that up next time somebody has a Hawaiian Punch juice box at lunch. All right. And Hank refers this to as his Willie Nelson golfing dream number 3. So this is a recurring dream for him. He knows what's going on. He and Peggy talk about it a little bit. Then we see more of Bobby acting like Hank. Doing his Hank impression on his sitting on the mower. I really like that Bobby's Hank impression involves telling Dale to shut up, that he's heard his dad say that to Dale enough that he knows that that's just one of the things is that I sell propane and I tell Dale to shut up.
Yeah.
Knocks it into gear. It hits the truck. And Hank comes out with the horn blowing to go, "What happened to my truck?" And Bobby just deadpanning, "Your mower hit it." Really hit me hard.
That one, I like that a lot, because I feel like that was an excellent kid who knows their way around being in trouble. Like a kid who's been in trouble before, or been yelled out by their dad before. That's an excellent, excellent answer.
Didn't try to run away. He's like, "Dad is very matter of fact, so I will handle this in a matter of fact way. You ask a question, here is a direct answer." We cut to Peggy getting out some frustration by pitching softball, which is one of those things, and this happens with all shows, where they bring up something a character does, then you kind of drop it, bring it back when you need it. There were several early in King of the Hill, like, you know, Luann being a good mechanic, Peggy being an excellent softball pitcher, that don't come up as the Luann mechanic thing just goes away completely. And Peggy is a good softball pitcher. They'll bring up every few years if they need to.
There was a weird joke after that she's done throwing softball with Luann. Luann comes in and takes off the catcher's mask, and she has like, I assume that was meant to be, she has a suntan, like sunburn from
the, maybe
it was, or, I didn't understand like what that joke was.
Yeah. It seems like something got cut out, and then because it wasn't referenced before or after.
Yeah. It's like she takes off the catcher's mask and her face is like got marks on it. Right. And I was like, did she get hit in the face? Is she bruised?
I don't know.
Is that, and then the best I can figure out is that she has a suntan line from a catcher's mask is the what I think the joke was, but it was not.
I don't know. Because
that one didn't all come together for me.
No, I was, and maybe that Bobby had used the mask for another prop joke and had got something on there that irritated her skin. I don't know. But yeah, I think that was something that whatever happened before and or after got cut, but they couldn't, they didn't feel like cutting that part out of the middle of that scene.
Where maybe that part was already animated. It would have cost more money to cut that.
Yeah, I think that's behind the thing. I think the real mystery from this scene, though, is Luann mentions that she's failing braiding, and Peggy says, "Braid work does not come natural to women in our family, honey. You know it, I know it, the whole town knows it." And is there just some like platter hair braiding trauma that we just also don't get? Because that seemed like such a very specific and ominous line.
This is what's known in the industry as world building. You're letting the viewers know there is a world that they are living in that is above and beyond what you know about already, and we're going to explore it in this series. Is the world like maybe one day we'll get to find out why the whole town knows that they're bad at braiding?
Yeah. But yeah, I felt like that definitely it built my interest for sure. Then Hank's trying to fix the truck after Bobby hit it, and all the gentlemen come out from the neighborhood, come out to help him. What I really like from this is also a world building, is we got to see what all of Hank's friends sleep in. And I said that says a lot about their personalities. Bill in a nightshirt, Boomer in his briefs, and Dale in a robe. And I just thought that, but with his cap still on. Still got the ball cap on. And I thought that really, it was a little subtle thing, but told me a lot about those characters.
Yes. Boomhauer in the little Speedo trunks was very, like, that's, again, like, actually, that's very, like, on brand for the character of Boomhauer, you know, for the series. Like, they had sort of figured out a lot of this stuff so early.
Yeah.
And I have to assume it's because I don't know enough about, like, the history of the show to know, like, are these really based on people Mike Judge has encountered in there, or is it just that they had things that figured out before the show even
got, I think it's more they just
started.
These were
and also I don't know what order they made the episodes, because sometimes with shows back in the day they weren't always necessarily aired in the order they were made.
Right. And for the purposes of this podcast, we're doing it in the order that they were aired. These were not in production. I don't think this was much later. This might have been like episode 5 instead of episode 4 or something like that. So it wasn't it wasn't far off. But yeah, no, Judge, just those four characters were just kind of, he just had in his mind, you know, one of his early sketches was just like these four guys standing there. And they all ended up being pretty close to what he initially sketched. And the other two were not necessarily based on anyone. Boomhauer's was based on an angry caller who was upset about Beavis and Butthead and just spoke in this rapid fire voice they couldn't really understand. And yeah, the rest of them, they kind of panned out. A lot of it happened with Greg Daniels when they brought him on early on. He added a lot of the little nuance to these characters, such as Dale being a conspiracy theorist and whatnot. And then they built this world. But now, as far as like the look and the general demeanor, they pretty much had all that from the pilot.
Well, Dale, Johnny Hardwick, the voice of Dale, wrote this episode.
Yeah, this was the first episode that he wrote. He was actually the first person hired onto the show.
Oh, so, wow. I didn't know that.
They brought Daniel saw him doing stand up and was like, all right, we're putting you in this, because he's a Texan, had some stories about being from Texas, and then brought him on as a writer. And then initially when they were looking at voices, I think they wanted to do Daniel Stern as the voice of Dale, but his ass would have been too much. And so,
Daniel Stern, he's the Wonder Years VO.
Right. So a very recognizable voice. I mean, he's got Home Alone money. He's doing fine. City Slickers money. Get out of here. That guy didn't need another gig. And then Stephen Root, who ends up playing Bill, actually initially auditioned for Dale. And then they just went in a different direction.
Was Stephen Root the voice of the guitar shop owner? It sounded like it to me, but I wasn't sure.
It was close. I'm not sure. I didn't look that one up in the credits. But yeah, it was close. So they go in, Dale's got some more conspiracy theories he throws out real quick. Then Hank catches Bobby using his golf club to hit dog poo into a trash can. Goes into
clean. Like you do.
Right. And then we now the tension keeps building as that Peggy is jealous of Betsy, Hank's guitar, who has a name. And so as he's cleaning with her brush, she takes the brush away and calls the brush Carlos, which I think was just an on-the-moment thing for Peggy. I don't think she actually names her brushes. She just wanted to show Hank kind of how absurd she thought that whole thing was. And then when he's trying to tell who he thinks Bobby could be more like, and he says, that boy with no legs who ran across Canada, which I'm assuming is a reference to Terry Fox, who in the late 70s, he was a runner, and he got cancer, and he had lost part of one of his legs and had a prosthetic, and was going to run from the Atlantic to the Pacific all the way across Canada, doing basically a marathon every day to raise awareness and money for cancer. He unfortunately did not make it. His health deteriorated to the point, and he died soon thereafter. But it was a very inspirational story. Was made into a movie that came out, like, I want to say mid-2000s. But also, there was a made-for-HBO, I think the first ever, like, made-for-cable production. It was an HBO movie on Terry Fox that I remember from my childhood from the early 80s. And it's still a big now, like if you ever meet a Canadian, you tell them like, hey man, do you do Toonies for Terry? And they're like, yeah, because they have a big Terry Fox day and all the kids at school, they all go out and run that day. And they're all supposed to like bring one Toonie to donate for cancer research. It's called Toonies for Terry. So
I'm completely unfamiliar with this, but I just Googled to see this guy and yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah.
With like not even like a below the knee, like a whole ass prosthetic leg,
right?
Running, like basically doing a marathon. That's crazy.
Yeah, it's a very.
It's not like the modern.
No, not what you're thinking. Like the Oscar Petraeus type of prosthetics. No,
no, this looks like
these were not designed to be ran in. This was just designed so that you had something there.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah. And then at that point, Hank looks it over and he goes, tries to talk to Bobby. Bobby's playing his video game and he gives another great Hank line. Bobby, you need to be lectured all afternoon.
I did like that line a lot.
Yeah. And so he's going to take him golfing with him. Another thing is here is Peggy brings out the golf clubs to put him in the trunk, establishing very early on that Peggy is strong. That's something that you stick with. And then they're going along and Hank begins to tell Bobby he needs a hero, and Hank's hero is Willie Nelson. He tells him why. Well, they're both from Texas. All right, that's huge. They both like playing the guitar and playing golf. You're like, okay. And this is where I wonder, because Hank is just so straight laced. Was like, Willie's had his troubles with the IRS, and I must have spent 6 hours on that 1040 form. And then he tagged it with "easy my ass," which got a good chuckle out of me.
One of my favorite lines of the whole episode was whenever he tells Bobby, they're getting in the car, and he tells Bobby, he goes, sit in the middle so Betsy's in front of the airbag. So he wants tells his son, sit in the middle seat so we can make sure that the guitar is in front of the airbag. I laughed at that.
Yeah. Bobby was too small to be in front of the airbags, and that might have injured him, but I don't think that's where Hank was thinking with that.
No, I don't believe that was his thinking. The thing about – this is like a big question for me for this episode, though, is like – because I understand like the King of Hill, like Hank Hill is very like very pro-Texas, all those things that he said, but like Willie Nelson's like – sort of this like crazy liberal hippie guy who I would think that Hank would have to be willfully ignorant of some of the things that Willie Nelson is so well known for to be so like that felt like that was sort of like, well, it's a show about Texas and we can get Willie Nelson, and Willie Nelson is who would not want Willie Nelson on their show, but it felt slightly forced to me.
I think from Hank's perspective, because like, as you know, he like when Bobby explains why he likes Willie Nelson, so like, you know, he's cool, says he's alternative, and then
right.
He, like, shuts that down. He's like, I followed him from country and western to adult contemporary. That's as far as I'll go. I think that's kind of part of what it is. Willie, I mean, Hank has kind of compartmentalized Willie into this version from his childhood. When he was the outlaw country guy, you know, and they were doing all the cosmic cowboy stuff at the Armadillo world headquarters and everything. And I think that's what it is. So I think Hank, it's kind of how Hank would be a fan of a player for the Dallas Cowboys, even if that player was always taunting or involved in some tawdry off-the-field activities, because he loves him because he's a Dallas Cowboy. I think he has a similar admiration for and compartmentalization for Willie Nelson.
I think that totally tracks. That actually sounds very in character for Hank. So I think that's an excellent point.
Yeah. We get a nice little quick scene from our like a C or D plot, which is Luann's braiding troubles, where she gets her hands caught up in the braiding machine, which was a beautiful visual gag.
That was very funny, but like this entire like, and you're I love what you said the DC or D plot because it really was because like this secondary plot to the show, the literal only thing I guess this is like really the C or D plot because the jealousy is I guess the B plot, right. But like this Luann thing, it's literally only heading to one thing, and you absolutely know what it is the entire time. Yeah. It's like, oh, she can't braid well. How's that going to come into play later? And then when it comes into play in like the like lowest stakes, like most innocuous payoff. But I guess in a real D plot kind of payoff, like, you know, it's like, it's just sort of like, oh, yeah. And by the way, now.
Yeah, it's something you could have easily forgot. And then they just, bam, hit you with it in the end. So they get there to Earl's guitar. Earl, a different take on, you know, don't know what kind of cheese. Like, Hank thought cheese smelled like feet. Earl thinks it smells like belly button. So
that made me laugh a lot.
This had a line that just killed me. So he says the one joke about, you know, I'd sell my wife or I'd sell my guitar. And then, you know, wives are like guitar. And he's like, I got a million of them. Wives are like guitars, come with string attached. And then Hank's kind of like leaning in, waiting for the next one. He's like, actually, I guess there's only the two. And that got me harder than anything in this episode, because I know those kind of people that you could tell they've like told a joke and they're on a roll. And then you're like, they're like, oh, yeah, I can do this all day. And they're like, no, I don't.
Like, actually, those are all my good ones.
Yeah. And just in another, we get Peggy going around complaining about Hank's adoration for his guitar. Goes to a yard sale, buys a guitar for $5, which a great deal, by the way. I don't know if you ever bought a guitar. That's a screaming deal. Even if
that seems pretty low to me. Guitar.
Yeah, very low. And then just immediately smashes it. She bought it like just to destroy it, which isn't something I would really expect of Peggy. But it was a very fun scene to watch. Now the guys are on the golf course with Bobby. Dale hits a bad shot, tries to break his club, and when it doesn't break, says, "Damn Russian titanium alloy." And this could be either way. This could be that Dale, because we see in the future as he buys lots of paramilitary equipment, may have actually bought clubs that are made from Russian titanium alloy, if that's even a thing. Or just part of his Dale conspiracy theory. The reason he can't break this club is because it's made from this special Russian titanium alloy. Otherwise, right, he'd have the strength to do it. Another good gag, just Bill telling the dirty joke, and Hank's like, you know, the boy's here. And so he goes with a just a really dumb, like, and it says, and the stripper decided to become a nun. But Boomhauer still just thinks it's hilarious, which just a lot of great character choices here in this scene.
I'm curious if that's a real joke with a real punchline that they then changed, or if that's just a setup that was written into the script where it's like a setup of Bill is about to tell a dirty joke. And then they have to make it nice for, or if there was a real joke,
right? Kind of like in Breakfast Club when he's like crawling through the ceiling telling the joke, and then he falls and never gets to the punchline, and everybody.
Right. Yeah.
I would say probably no. I would guess that's a fun thing for writers to do, because you can create the most outrageous setup because you don't have to pay it off. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
So yeah, probably not a real joke, but you could probably tie one together. That's an exercise for another day. Then Bobby hits a nice little pitch, gets it in the hole. They're like, all right, Bobby, take another shot. He loses the club, beans Willie Nelson with it. So they go over to check on this man who's been hit. Turns out to be Willie Nelson. Dale immediately says, check him for cigarettes, or check his pockets for cigarettes, which I thought was great. I think definitely a plot point that where they maybe hadn't figured this character out. There's no way Dale would ever run out of cigarettes. There's no way he would have went to the golf course and not had at least 2-3 extra packs on him stuck somewhere in his golf bag.
And he runs out of cigarettes like fairly immediately after they get there, because he's been asking about cigarettes. Yeah. He's like, oh, I ran out of cigarettes. And yeah, I agree. That doesn't feel like Dale really definitely would have them packed away somewhere.
So they start tending to Willie, make sure he's not bleeding out of his ears, which is apparently the sign that a person is okay in King of the Hill universe, because it comes up again. Hank begins to profess his admiration for Willie, you know, that he's been to his concerts and everything. I like that he said he's been to Farm Aid every time except one. I don't much care for that Bryan Adams. So Hank's views on Canadians, pro Terry Fox, anti Bryan Adams. Yeah. Kind of laying it out there.
So Willie leans over onto the wheel of the golf cart and then just starts to ride away. Is he concussed or is he in riding away on purpose? Cause it was unclear to me what's happening in that moment.
I was also unsure on that. Because at first it seemed that he would just kind of fell forward and his foot hit the accelerator and off he went. But I could also see him trying to get away from Hank, but it was kind of weird that his head was on the steering wheel, which is not how anyone would drive literally any vehicle, golf cart, anything. I don't know if, because there was no indication that like, oh, well, maybe he put his eye on the steering wheel because the steering wheel was cold and it helped with the swelling.
That seems like a stretch.
If so, they would have needed to alluded to that earlier and been like, oh, they have these special cold steering wheels so that your hands don't get too hot and you can grip the club. Like,
you know, like they have
it out. Yeah. Even if it is something absurd, like introduce it into the plots and this later thing would make sense. Yeah. Once again, I don't know. It seemed, and they just kind of let him go. It seems like this guy was concussed, maybe not even conscious, and mindlessly driving this golf cart, which turns out is their golf cart, away. Right. And they just had to let it happen. So that was very – I don't think that you missed a thing there. If you did, I did as well. I've watched this one a few times, so I think it was, you know, maybe another edit that
Yeah, just like, well, we have to presume he got back to his trailer outside his repossessed residence.
Yeah.
Somehow.
He didn't just
Golf course. Did we see? Oh, I wonder. I didn't look for it, but I wonder if the golf cart was outside. Is the golf cart outside the trailer when we see it later? I don't remember seeing that.
I don't remember seeing it.
That is something I would have
probably. I think I would have picked up on that and like, oh, he just drove the golf cart home.
If I was working on the show, I would have pitched that the golf cart is there.
Yeah, that's a good gag. And one of those, once again, for people who are trying to figure out where Arlen is, it's once again, it is wherever it needs to be, but it's always in Texas because apparently Bobby can ride his bike to Willie Nelson's house.
Right.
Which is, just outside of Austin in Texas standards. Thing happens because his guitar gets delivered, so Bobby's going to take it to Willie Nelson to get it autographed. And as Bobby's on his bike, he's having an inner monologue, which is not something this show employs very often.
Yeah, I noticed that. I noticed that as well. I was like,
to me,
I couldn't remember another time of that, but I'm admittedly not, I would not say I'm a King of the Hill expert, but I've seen plenty of King of the Hill in my day, and that stuck out to me as well.
Yeah, I won't say that they never use it again, but they definitely rarely use this technique. Yeah. But once again, this is early season one. They're still
figuring it out.
Stuff out. The only example then we get of any of Willie Nelson's music in here, when Bobby hits the doorbell, it plays the beginning of On the Road Again. And that's the only Willie Nelson music we get.
I thought that was, I absolutely noticed that as well. And I'm curious if there's more to that from a licensing and financial perspective, if there was like
100%,
some,
I would guess.
Some sort, because even if you get a guy, if you get Willie Nelson on the show to do VO or whatever, that doesn't mean you get Willie Nelson's music on your show. That's a whole other thing. And I don't know about we do know, as it's referenced many times in this episode, that Willie's possessions were garnished and taken and he owed the IRS quite a lot of money. I don't know who was in control of his catalog at this time and whether or not that may have been something that was completely out of his control. Because as it often is for musical artists, they don't necessarily have the right to tell you that you can use their music or whatever for free, even if they want you to be able to do it.
Yeah, I don't know. This would have been released in 97, produced in 96. Do not know the state of Willie Nelson's publishing rights in 1996. Right. But yeah, I think it's fair to say they I'm sure they looked into it. Sure. And this show was on Fox. They got network money, you know?
That stuff is expensive,
but
though.
But even still, that's what I'm saying, even with that.
Yeah, getting licensing music for shows, it is shockingly expensive. At least in my experience, I haven't worked on a lot of shows that have done that. And in the handful of times we've ever thought we should or tried to do it, it was just prohibitively expensive. And so I marvel. Two shows that do it constantly are South Park and Always Sunny in Philadelphia, license tons of music. And I'm just always blown away. I'm like, how much did they spend on that? It's something that I've dealt with in my career, and not personally, because I never was in charge of that, but like, just be like, oh, we want to get this song. And it's like, we're not getting that song.
Right. I know, because it's kind of a joke, but also that I make, but it's also kind of true that's the reason I'll never be able to complete a screenplay, because I wouldn't be able to afford the soundtrack budget I have in my head to make the movie I want to make.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I'm a big music fan, and a lot of my thoughts are very music focused. And I was like, oh, I would have to just keep settling for all these songs that didn't
like
quite.
You got it. The needle drop like picked out in your head.
Yeah.
As you're writing it, and then when it kind of comes time to like get it, it's like, okay, no. Yeah.
And I'd be like, no. We need these two. We need to license these two Rolling Stones songs, because in this scene we're listening to the album, and that song ends, and the next song plays. So we need like the first 30 seconds of that song, so that it's like they're actually listening to the album. So then we have to pay all that extra money for the second song just to get the beginning for my artistic vision. So yeah, I'm never going to get to make one of these movies. Yeah.
I remember there was an episode of he has fallen out of favor at this point, but like Louis, there's an episode of Louis where he's driving and he's listening to
The Who.
The Who, I can't remember which song, but yeah, The Who. And I just remember watching that and thinking, that must have cost. I was distracted from the episode by thinking about how much that cost.
I was too. I actually read an article somewhere. I know the story behind how that happened. It's really, really bonkers. That was based on a thing that he had actually been in the car and like done that out with his kids. Mm. And so when he wrote that scene, obviously that was the song in his head. And so he reached out, was like, oh, how much for this Who song? And of course it was a lot. And this show on, FX.
FX, yeah.
Not Always Sunny money, apparently, because they can just do that. But didn't have that kind of budget. And so he somehow, like, directly got in this. So this is where it's a little vague, but if it's the best I remember, got it directly in touch with Pete Townsend. Because there's whatever the publishing house is going to charge for you. But, like, if the artist sets a price, the publishing house has to match it. And so Pete Townsend was like, yeah, give me $5,000 or something. I don't know what number he said. And so then contractually, whoever had the publishing rights had to match what the guy who wrote it was. And I don't know if that was something very specific about his contract and his publishing rights. But, yeah, that's how they got that super expensive song on a cable show.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. Well, that's the thing I do know, is that whatever you're trying to do that, it's extremely complicated, and there's lots of people involved.
Yeah.
Other than the artist.
Because who all was in the band and who wrote it, and are there co-writers and have somebody sold off their publishing rights, but not the other. Right. Yeah. And then just, does somebody actually want to go through and like do all the math, figure out who's got to get a check here and there. But so Bobby gets there, and he's helping Willie with his golf video game. And then they try to figure out who they are, because Willie recognizes him but doesn't know from where, maybe because of the head trauma, or maybe just because he barely met the kid. They have a great back and forth where he's like, are you the kid that rakes my lawn? He's like, no, I hit you with a golf club. And he's like, I hit you in the head. He's like, you hit me with a rake. And he's like, no, a golf club. You're raking my lawn with a golf club. I want my quarterback. It was just beautiful, and just Willie Nelson and Pamela Adlon going back and forth was
without a doubt my favorite moment in the whole episode. Yeah. That was the funny, like, I was imagining the person that wrote that the moment they got done writing that, like getting up and taking a break and just walking around their house triumphantly feeling good, like, or the writer, whatever, just like I would feel so good about myself if I ever wrote something that
I would not want to be at home alone because it's like I have to high five somebody right now.
Right. I'm sure it'll happen. Well, I'm thinking at home alone because it's like we're in the pandemic and I've been working from home for a year and a half. But like, I'm sure it happened in like a writer's room, like at 1 a.m. right. morning or something.
Yeah, there was somebody.
Probably a team effort.
Yeah. But yeah, and it's one of those, like, it's just so quintessential, like, comedy dialogue. They could have, this could have been an Abbott and Costello yeah. thing 80 years ago. It was just great comedy, beautiful timing, perfect.
Yeah, I loved it.
So he calls Hank and tells Hank to come over. Hank, because Bobby, where are you at? And another great Hank line. He's like, I don't know, crushing Dwight Yoakam's voice box with my 5-iron, which was not a very Hank Hill-like line. But made me laugh nonetheless. Willie gets on the phone. They invite Hank over. And he thinks Bobby's there causing trouble. And he's busting through, runs past, and no dialogue but animated Lyle Lovett, and shoves him out of the way and says, out of my way, rooster boy.
I caught that because yeah. This is where all the celebrity cameos start coming right. in. I caught that was Lyle Lovett. I recognized him. But... Then he didn't say anything. So I'm wondering if they even like talked to Lyle Lovett about this at all, or if they just stuck him in there.
Yeah, if they tried to get Lyle on, and either he couldn't do it, like, didn't want to, but they're like somebody around the office had just like, guys, I can draw a really good Lyle Lovett, and they're like, well, we're using it. And yeah, so
he's very specific looking.
Oh yeah, that you knew it was Lyle Lovett without them saying this is Lyle Lovett. You know, like that character likes his egg. It's over easy with a flour tortilla. I can just tell. Now, Hank figures out everything's cool, and he and Willie start talking. Willie brings out Trigger, which is huge because, you know, they're like, oh, I got Betsy and you got Trigger. Trigger, for those who don't know, is Willie's guitar, which he's had since, I want to say, like 1969. And it was originally like damaged and then it was repaired. And then now it just like, there's literally holes in it just from the oils in his fingers. Cause he's used.
Like famously right below where he would strum the pick would or whatever.
Yeah. Cause there's not a pick guard because it was not meant to be played like that.
And, right. Also I did like that. I don't play guitar. I'm not a guitar expert at all, but I believe
I'm one of those.
They're both classical. Like Betsy's a classical guitar, are they both classical guitars?
Because it doesn't because the I tried to look up the because Hank's like it's a 1963 blah, and I tried to look up the type of guitar he said it was, and it's not actually a guitar, which in the exact way that he says it, he says it's an acoustic, which makes me think that is what he calls it, which makes me think that somebody knew a little bit about did like just enough Googling to figure out how to name a guitar in the script, but nobody there.
The tuning things that you mm-hmm. turn where the strings attach at the top of the guitar, like where those, like that's what I in my head is like that makes it a classical guitar, the way that that is, those aren't
the classical guitar. Also has to do with the kind of strings that are used. It's gonna be like nylon, the silk strings instead of like the steel strings.
There's
some other and like the body shape and all. A lot of those choices that would have been animation choices on what kind of guitar they decided to draw.
Well, I have to imagine they made Trigger accurate.
I would hope so.
And I remember noticing that
they definitely put a hole in it.
Right. Yeah. It had a hole in it. Yeah. I have no idea.
Important to Willie. He, you know, rescued Trigger from his burning house. I don't know that he ran back in to get it. In my head, that's how the story goes. He's running into a burning house to retrieve his beloved guitar, but it was probably just like, hey, I smell smoke. And he's like, well, I'm getting the guitar out of here. and as much as Peggy thinks that's maybe what that Hank may have gone for Betsy first, I think Betsy would have been maybe the fourth thing out of the house. Like Bobby, Peggy, Lady Bird. He might have got Betsy before Luann, but, you know,
that's what it is. There are some good like Luann moments where she's wearing this is something I don't know why this one is like I remembered this from when I maybe had originally that she's wearing very short shorts under like a long t-shirt and it freaks him out.
Yeah. Hank is not comfortable with that. And then there's an off camera joke where he leaves the kitchen. He's like, Luann, stop sitting like that. So they establish that Luann is very much there to make Hank uncomfortable. Even though that is not her intent, but as a character is the writing, not that Luann wants that. We get the great Boomhauer and Bob Dylan scene. This is unfortunately not actually Bob Dylan doing his own voice. And Boomhauer just telling him about how much he loves it, his music and the conversion and all this. Bob Dylan just really spews some nonsense back at him. As someone who's a pretty good Bob Dylan fan, I'm like, you just said nothing.
Right. I have to imagine that, like, if I had stopped to think about it for 2 seconds, I would have realized that's certainly not Bob Dylan. But at the time I was watching, I was like, oh, Bob Dylan.
Well, no, at that point, because you've already seen Willie Nelson, and I remember, like, other celebrities in there, and I was like, yeah, I was like, fuck, they got Dylan. I would have remembered that. But no, not actually Bob Dylan. Another great scene of Dale and Bill mansplaining to this woman how to pour a beer. Which is very much what they were doing. Yeah, it didn't really fit in other than because we don't know who this woman was. She was just a woman who was drawn in. She came to pour a beer at a keg, and Bill and Dale stood there and told her how to pour a beer, that she was doing it wrong. In the end, she had a perfect pour. And
I think
kind of random.
I think that was the joke. Like, yeah, if that's the joke, like, I was still waiting for there to be like a punchline or something to that.
Missing something. And once again, maybe they cut something out before or after, but it was just, they were just telling this woman how to pour a beer. She was ignoring them and then had a perfect pour.
Yeah.
So she definitely was none of the people who work at Cheers, who historically poured the worst beers in television history. All foam. Now we get to Peggy talking to Dennis Hopper. And this is actually Dennis Hopper doing the voice here. And I won't know for sure if Dennis is hitting on Peggy, but he's at least flirting with her.
Oh, 100%. Yes, that is and I also, correct me if I'm wrong, but this is sort of a thing that happens throughout the series, is like they allude to the fact that other men definitely 100% like Peggy and fall for Peggy, right? Is this that's something that kind of comes up a few other times, right?
Yeah. Peggy has her suitors. She's not without them.
But why Dennis Hopper?
I don't know if that's just another one of those. It kind of makes me think that they could get him. Somebody knew somebody, a friend of, and just,
gotta be.
Yeah.
I have no idea. Is he from Texas? He might be from Texas. I don't know. Is he from Texas?
Oh, fuck. I don't know either. I don't think so. If so, they don't mention. It seems like it's a thing they would mention. I mean, I know Lyle Lovett's a Texan. I don't know.
Dennis Hopper is from Dodge City, Kansas.
Okay.
But maybe he spent some time. I don't know. I just Googled that. Sorry.
He's from the place where all the Westerns were set. No, thank you for doing that. Glad you have the extra computer there to access. Yeah. This is good. Yeah. But he has a great, where he just thinks Peggy's like, as she's complaining about Hank and his relationship with Betsy, the guitar. And he says, do you want me to kick his ass? Which is just a beautiful offer by Dennis Hopper. And then Peggy, Peggy does two things here. One shows that she not only loves, but also respects Hank in a way that she says, oh, Hank would flatten you out like a bug. Doesn't even try to humor the fact that Dennis Hopper could actually beat up her husband. And then Peggy also is like, well, Peggy, he'll have to take care of this. Peggy referring to herself in the third person, which is a tactic she had from the get-go. Now Hank and Willie are talking, and he's expressing his troubles with Bobby. And this is where that beautiful moment that so many King of the Hill episodes have, where you see Hank and Bobby, it seems like they're never going to get together, but man, they are. There's the love and everything, because he says all these things that Bobby was doing, from wrecking the mower and playing the guitar and the golf clubs. And he's like, hey, Bobby is wanting to do all the things that you like to do. You're Bobby's hero. And that comes together for Hank. And it's just really just the perfect moment in this episode.
Yeah. I like that. That was an excellent moment. And it's also like that his hero is pointing this out to him.
Yes.
It's like, you're somebody's hero.
You're somebody's hero. Right. And it paid off. Just all these little things that just could have been just Bobby just doing things to be an annoying kid, but it all led up to something and it all paid off. So just a great little bit of writing there.
Yeah. And I would say the way they handled it in the beginning of the episode is it didn't, I mean, in hindsight, it's clear, but like as you're watching the episode, it doesn't like tip. It's not like hitting you over the head with this idea.
No, not at all.
Trying to be like Hank. And then when he points it out, you're like, oh yeah, of course.
Yeah. Everything I saw 20 minutes ago makes sense. Yeah. Just excellent writing here. Hank goes to tell him. Bobby also lets Hank know that he helped put ointment in Willie's eye. and then wants to sing him a song he wrote about Peggy.
Well, no, wait, hold on. We skipped. You said where Willie's like, Bobby's telling me all about you, and your Smitson's is there in urethra, which comes up over.
Yeah, that's when Hank. Yeah, well, like when Hank first gets there, he's told me all about you. I'm your hero. You're my narrow urethra. That just everybody knows, and that's something they immediately bring up, no matter how comfortable it makes.
Yeah.
That Bobby is not only aware his dad has a narrow urethra, but just is like, oh, I should tell everyone about this.
Yeah, so this is the nice running facts guy. About my dad. He sells propane and propane products.
And he has an narrow
urethra. And accessories. And he has a narrow urethra. These are the things. And these are the things that if you ask someone today to tell me something you know about Hank Hill, those would probably be the two things people remember.
Yeah.
Propane and propane accessories, narrow urethra.
And why and I think part of it, part of the fun of that just gag that runs for years is each character has a very specific way they say the word urethra with the way that they do their inflections and their accents. And so everybody kind of puts their own little twist on that word, which makes me, I don't know if they realized that when they picked this this problem for Hank to have. But yeah, there's just, for me, a lot of comedic gold in that, and that everyone like has just, it's, there's so many little touches you can put on that word to give it a different sound.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then Peggy hears him playing the song. She kind of realizes, oh, my husband does love me more than he loves the guitar. And just a great Peggy Hunt says, I love you, propane man. Which seems like something that if you said to most anybody else, they would kind of get upset, or if you refer to somebody as their job. But to Hank, that's like, you know, the best thing she could have said.
Yeah. I'm gonna ask my fiance to refer to me as Cartoon Man from now on.
Then we get the last scene with Luann successfully braiding Willie's hair and even putting a little glitter in there. So we get a nice payoff on that too, which I'd also sort of forgotten about. And then as we go to the credits, we get our first appearance on this series of Ann Richards. But once again, they didn't get Ann's voice, which I don't know if maybe they thought they were going to, because later they do a few seasons. But yeah, Ann Richards playing tetherball with one of Willie's roadies. Yeah. Ann Richards, former governor of Texas.
That one I did recognize. That was a name I did recognize. If there were several people that they referenced during this. I was like, I wonder if this was still 1997, if I would know who those people were. But I think some of them may have been fictional people. But definitely Ann Richards was a name that I recognized.
Yeah.
Because that's who she calls, like Peggy, when he calls and says that he's at Willie Nelson's house. And she's like, oh, yeah. And I'm, you know, crocheting with Ann Richards.
Yeah, I'm painting my nails with Ann Richards.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Ann Richards is real, and she comes back for a marvelous turn here in a few seasons.
Yes.
We'll be back to talk more Hank's Got the Willies with Mac Williams right after this. What King of the Hill character are you? Mac Williams.
Oh, man. I mean, definitely Bobby.
Okay.
Is the King of the Hill character that I relate to the most, because I was like definitely a weird sort of indoor nerdy kid and all. I mean, I grew up to make cartoons for a living. Like, you don't start out on that career path by being a star athlete usually. No. So
yeah, it's an alone time kind of a hobby.
Yeah. So I feel like I think often they give Bobby gets a lot of the best lines in the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes, and I like to think maybe I was a funny child. I don't know. I like to think I was. You could ask my parents; they would probably disagree. But
they would probably say he thought he was a funny child.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I know that's what my fiance. but you know, I think Bobby is the person I relate to the most, because I also feel like when I started watching this show, even though Bobby's much younger than I was, like I was a teenager when the show came out, and I mostly watched it in my younger years. And so I feel like I relate more to the younger characters, even though today, if I were to do like a full series rewatch again, I'm sure I would find myself relating more to Hank, 'cause now I'm 40 years old.
Right. Yeah. Right. Okay. What was your best line of the episode?
Oh, definitely the you've been raking my yard with a golf club. I want my quarterback. Like that's the, like that was that whole thing. Like I really cracked up at that whole interact that whole interaction was superb.
That was my favorite too, but I always have a backup because sometimes we have the same favorite. So I'm going to go with "Out of my way, Rooster Boy" as my favorite line. Who was your MVP?
Like my MVP of the episode. Huh. Well, it's just like, I feel like everyone carried the load pretty well. Like, I don't feel like anyone especially stood out because I feel like Hank and Bobby, this is a real Hank and Bobby centric mm-hmm. episode. And I felt like I wasn't super into Peggy's storyline of her being like jealous of the guitar as much. So, and Luann's storyline was, as we said, like kind of D plot. So I'd say it's a pretty even split between Hank and Bobby, although I'll give Dale like honorable mention because I just felt like he had the other thing we didn't even touch on, like Dale, this is in like 1997 and Dale's talking about the black helicopters and all his conspiracy series. So he's like talking about
backspace dot helicopter dot black or whatever. Yeah.
No, like talking about like Usenet groups or is that what this calls? Usenet groups.
Yeah.
No, because this would have been, so 97, like when was the X-Files? This is like X-Files
was happening at this point.
Yeah. So I remember I remember going on those things and like reading like conspiracy theory stuff and UFO stuff and like the early days of the internet and like looking at weird stuff and weird groups on the internet and things like that early on. And then it was just the parallel with what the internet is today. It's exactly the same. It's like that little tiny sub corner, little pocket that only Dale knew about of the internet. Now that's the whole internet.
Yeah.
That's the whole internet now. So I thought that was
10 stories on Facebook every day.
Yeah. That was, both very funny and also a little depressing to me. They'll joke about the black helicopter.
It's definitely going back and watching this show through 2021 eyes. It's kind of weird to see Dale because he's just kind of a harmless goof with this stuff.
Right.
For the most part. And definitely everyone treats him like, oh, that's Dale. He's just got a thing. And no one felt that like Dale could actually
threaten
to rise to power any way. He can't even rise to power in his own house, you know?
Right.
So,
oh, man.
My MVP, I'm going with Willie Nelson. I thought Willie really delivered here. And I know he's done some acting before, but he, you know, especially, I mean, a lot of it just that exchange we keep going back to with Bobby and, you know, you're breaking my yard with the golf club. I just really, there was at no point where it felt forced that Willie Nelson was in this episode.
Oh, totally agree.
Yeah.
And also, and I think you were right to like his VO performance was really good because, you know, sometimes people that are not actors, mm-hmm. even if they've done live action acting in front of a camera or something, doing VO is a totally different skill set.
For sure.
And that doesn't make you necessarily good at both of them. And so I felt like, his VO record performance was great. I'm sure it had a lot to do with whoever was directing him in the booth. If it was Mike Judge or one of the other writers or directors or something. I agree. He had a great performance.
Yeah. And especially with that. And I mean, I don't know how this episode or Willie's parts was taken, if he was there for, you know, table reads or if they had everybody in the studio or if it's just Willie and somebody feeding him lines. But I thought he really nailed it. What's your, what's a lesson you learned out of this episode?
Oh, a lesson. Well, I guess I did take note of how Hank talked so cavalierly about his love for his guitar right in front of his wife, talking about how much he loved the guitar. And then she starts telling him how much she loves her family. And he goes, see, you get it.
mine is kind of something similar. And it is very much because it did tie into that, you know, you see how much Hank is like, this guitar is very important to me and my lawnmower is important to me and my golf clubs are important to me. But at the end, what he really realizes is like, it's his family. Cause like, I don't know, it's like stuff is stuff, but love is love.
Sure. And yeah.
That was kind of my lesson learned from this.
I didn't really say a lesson. That's what I said. But like, I guess the lesson of that is like to be more mindful about what you say to your wife.
I think, yeah, that's a good lesson for anyone. Yeah. What made you happy in this episode?
What made me happy? One thing that was that made me happy that's just like a very, very minor thing was the Game Boy that both Willie Nelson and Bobby were playing, because I was like, oh, how quaint and nostalgic to be playing a Game Boy. Like, because I played Game Boy, obviously. I'm of the age of that was like one of the biggest Christmas gifts I ever received was like a Game Boy at one point. And so that made me happy to see, like, even though it was like a fake non-Game Boy Game Boy in terms of the design, they very clearly
made the top too big for some reason.
Yeah, they very clearly got a note from someone's like, this can't look exactly like a Game Boy. We don't have the rights to that.
And they never say Game Boy.
Yeah, and then also the... I guess I'm
that would have been that Game Boy ain't right. That line was right there.
Jeez. Oh man. And then the other thing that made me really happy was a small detail. I'm picking small details for some reason. I don't know why, but
that's all right.
Was that they included the hole in Trigger, that they included the hole in the guitar because that's what it's like known for. And I was like, oh, that's really nice that they like put that in there.
Yeah. The thing that made me happy, and it was one of those things that I forgot, but when they pulled it together in the end, that really was like, was that just Luann conquered Braiding. I am always down to see Luann get a W.
I don't know if I remember, because I definitely had seen this episode, you know, back when it originally aired. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I just somehow had a subconscious memory of that, but... I knew whenever they were talking about the braiding and knowing it was Willie Nelson was in the episode, I'm like, at some point she's going to braid. I just knew that was coming. The braiding Willie Nelson's hair part of it seemed real. And I don't know if it's because I remembered it or because I figured it out. I'm not sure, but I was like, when's she going to get to braid Willie Nelson's hair? Why are we setting up this braiding storyline in an episode with Willie Nelson, the most famous man with, and possibly human with braided hair in the world.
He's up there on that list for sure.
Yeah.
And yeah, just distinctly, like if you're doing a silhouette, like, cause they've done that when they are, when, you know, if you were a graphic designer and they're like, make a Willy logo, you're putting the braids on there.
That's right. Absolutely.
How you make it look
iconic.
Yeah. So what out of this episode, what are you grateful for?
Grateful for, you know, I'm grateful for like, the characters, like in terms of, it just really made me rewatching this episode and just these early season one stuff where it's like they had this so figured out from the jump in a way that in my opinion is somewhat rare. Especially for a show that, you know, it ran for a good chunk of time and, you know, the characters developed for sure and the characters grew and you learn more about them and they took on additional traits. But a lot of the like base things like stayed the same and like really were already there at this point. And I felt like I have a larger appreciation of that from having worked in the industry for a while now. And just like knowing that they had figured this out so well ahead of time is really cool to me.
Yeah. I'm never not blown away with that when I watch these early episodes, because I think in my head, cause I know how most every other show is and I'm like, they eventually get it figured out, but I'm just like, man, like four episodes in, five, if you're going to production order, and it's just so much is already in place.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I am grateful for this turned out very well for Hank. I am grateful that I have never met most of my heroes just because I know without having maybe a negative personal interaction, how many of them, particularly from like the sporting world, kind of turned out to maybe not be the best humans or have the best politics or be the best at their job. So, I've had a couple of negatives, but yeah, and some positives, but mostly I think I'm just glad that I haven't met most of my heroes and can just enjoy their art or athletic accomplishments or whatever from afar as a fan. All right. So how are you rating this episode from one Alamo to a full six pack? What are you giving it?
Oh, I think you have to give this, I'm going to give it a 5.
Okay.
Because I feel like this was like, an episode that really I think is a classic mm-hmm. episode of the series, that having Willie Nelson on and everything. It's like, you know, it reminds me, not to bring up The Simpsons again, but like there's some of those
you can't
early
not bring up The Simpsons and talking about pop
culture. Right. Yeah. It's like, well, you can't. Yeah. But like, you remember the episode, and this is a bad example just because of how things have turned out. But like, you know, they had an episode with Michael Jackson on. Yeah. And it's like, that's a classic episode, even though it's like not that good of an episode necessarily. Yeah. But it's like, that's a classic episode of Simpsons. I feel like this was like, it establishes the world of this like Texas world that they live in Arlen, and how everything is like, you know, so Texas-y, for lack of a better term that I can come up with right now. But like, I don't know. I feel like this is like a classic season one episode. It's a classic Bobby and Hank get to relate to one another better episode, which is a theme of the show, sort of. I don't know. I would say maybe it's a 4-pack, but I'm giving it a 5-pack. One extra beer, one extra Alamo, strictly for the, you've been raking my lawn with a golf club. I want my quarterback. I just love that line so much. It's one full beer for that.
It's the best. They deserve it. Like, whoever wrote that line deserves at least a 6-pack just for themselves. Follow Mac Williams on Twitter and Instagram at AEWSOME to see his thoughts on barbecue, professional wrestling, the Okefenokee Swamp, and the world at large. Check out MacWilliams.com to learn more about him and his production company, Pig Apple, which specializes in live action animation and visual effects. Excited to be adding new listeners to Clean Burn. Help more people find us with those 5-star ratings and reviews. Follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Clean Burn Pod. Join us at patreon.com/cleanburnpod for early access, ad-free episodes, bonus content, and more. Thanks for listening to Clean Burn.
Hey, I know you. You're the kid that rakes my lawn.
No, I'm the kid who hit you in the head.
With a rake?
No, with a golf club.
You've been raking my yard with a golf club? I want my quarterback.
This is a production of Defense Mechanism Records.